Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. One of the most exciting nights in cinema is upon us once again. This Sunday, the American Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences will present the 85th Academy Awards. Nominees for Best Picture this year include independently produced Beasts of the Southern Wild, Steven Spielberg's biopic Lincoln, David O. Russell's Silver Linings Playbook, Quentin Tarantino's slavery epic Django Unchained, and Catherine Bigelow's Bin Laden Killer Zero Dark Thirty. We want to talk Oscars today. 800-348-2551 is the number. 1-800-348-2551. Or you can post your comments at the bottom of today's show page on the Vox Pop section of our website, wamc.org/VoxPop. You could also comment, if you wish, below today's Vox Pop wall post on our Facebook page. It's facebook.com/WAMC Radio, or you can tweet your questions and comments at WAMC Vox Pop. Now, ordinarily, you'd say, well, why would I ask Ray any questions about the movies? Well, that's the good news. The good news is joining us today to give their take on the nominees and take your calls, Rob Edelman and Audrey Kupferberg, professors of film studies at SUNY Albany. Rob and Audrey have co-authored several entertainment biographies, and as regular commentators right here are regarded as the foremost authorities at WAMC and the premier couple of cinematic criticism and analysis. Well,
thank you, sir.
So do I get any kind of award for reading that?
Yes, you get the Rob and Audrey Oscar.
Nice. 1-800-348-2551. Rob and Audrey, nice to have you here again. It's that time again.
Pleasure
nice
to be
here.
So, you know, taken as a whole, is this a good year? Is this a good batch of films or kind of a lame batch of films?
Well, basically, last year was like every year. You go from January to September, and it's either the big blockbusters, the summer blockbusters, or films that are here and gone. Mm-hmm. Dreadful reviews that they may rake up at the box office, but they're out on DVD and Blu-ray in 2 months. September, the Oscar season really begins. I must say that I, in my view, last year had some phenomenally good films that came out mostly starting with September. Amour, French film, which is Best Picture nominee.
Yeah.
Argo, which was my favorite film of the year. All the nominees, for the most part, Django Unchained, which Audrey and I could speak for Audrey, we both love.
Mm.
I know some people aren't all that taken with Tarantino, but both of us are big Tarantino fans. Lincoln, which Audrey and I disagree with, I liked a lot more than she did, and on and on. But I think it was a pretty good year, I would say, given the politics of Hollywood, given the business of motion pictures. I think it was an above-average year.
So, Audrey, you know, if most of the pictures that are under consideration are released in September, why wouldn't all the major film studios just not release summer pictures and just do it in September?
Oh, I think they know their product. I think they can judge what the Oscar community, the Oscar voting community, will judge as a proper production for Oscar consideration.
Right.
Yeah.
So Skyfall, which I thought was great, is not in anywhere except maybe in music.
Well, so interesting that you would bring that up, because Skyfall, to me, is the one title missing from the list of nominees. To me, Argo and Skyfall are the two best pictures of the year.
Mm.
But to go back to your discussion with Robin
about the batch of films for the year.
What do I feel about that? I think it was a very good year. I think the production quality is so high on a consistent level.
On a technical level?
On a technical level.
Okay.
That what separates the best films from the average to good are the screenplays, the measure of humanity, or the measure of success in reaching a particular target in
but
a
not
film.
Financial success, but a
no, I'm not well, talking
philosophical
about
success
office.
Or a vision.
Yeah, a
success.
Vision,
yeah.
A vision.
Yeah.
With the better films, I think you have to look towards how well it's attained a vision that the creative filmmakers have looked towards.
Yeah.
But I can't believe Skyfall is not on that list.
It made us cheer. I went to the movies to see it, and I must say we don't get out very often. My wife didn't get out, but we saw it on the HD on pay-per-view, mm-hmm. and she was actually cheering. And yeah. you know, most Bond films are so kitschy and generally dreadful over the last how many years. This had everything.
Well, for me, what made Scarfall work so well was primarily Sam Mendes' direction.
Yeah.
Didn't get a nomination. Yeah. To me, it's great when you see a film that has all the technology, all the special effects, and you add to it a certain level of intelligence. So many films that come out today have the technology down, but they're mindless. There's no characterization, there's no plot, or a plot that's not believable. When you have a film like Skyfall that's just a lot of fun, that has characters that you care about. Another Argo, certainly. Think about Argo. You know the ending of it because it's a based-on-fact story.
Yeah.
But the film is just so well made that you're on the edge of your seat. A film like Django Unchained, you know, you have to really be open to Tarantino and what he's basically trying to say here. Well-made film, but a lot of fun. And there's a certain level of intelligence here. I can go on and on here. When you have that combination of the two, this is what makes a film special, I think. Certainly, I'm talking about big-budget Hollywood films.
Right. The number to call, by the way, if you want to jump in here with Audrey and Rob, it's 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551 as we talk Oscars on this Thursday Vox Pop. A point that Audrey just made, which I think is very interesting, she brought up the fact that there is such great production value. A bar is now set. In other words, technology has now made it to a point where even people with less budgets can do amazing things. Now, does, you know, maybe 20 years ago where the Academy would be wowed by production values, are they now saying, well, listen, the story's the thing, the characters are the thing, we're not going to be blown away by these effects that everybody has?
I don't think they've come that far. I think if you look at the Best Picture nominees, that in several cases we have films that are relying on production values and have not gone the extra step. I'll even go out on a limb and give you a couple titles. Lincoln. Steven Spielberg has recreated, through great, great production values, he's recreated a period of our history.
Mm-hmm.
But the way he presents the screenplay is, I found, I hate to say this, but I found it boring.
Pedestrian, then.
Pedestrian.
Wow.
Yes.
And we disagree on this. You should hear some of our conversations after we see films.
Really?
Just had a fight in the car coming here.
Darn, you should save that for the show.
Well, hold on. What happened?
We're not. We slept 45 minutes.
Well, you know what? That's
yeah,
a good
never
point.
Know what's going to happen in 45 minutes.
So Rob, you're of the opinion that Lincoln is strong. Now, you know, if there's smart money, it says this is a race now between Lincoln and Argo.
Well,
and Rob, you think Lincoln's pretty strong?
Well, as a film, I liked it. It's Spielberg, which is a good thing on a lot of levels. But the reason why I really think Argo is going to win, this is an issue that's been in the media quite a bit in recent days and weeks. Now, Argo, 7 nominations, including Best Picture, but nothing for Ben Affleck, the director. This was very controversial. The fact that he and Catherine Bigelow were not nominated for Best Director. Bigelow, of course, directed Zero Dark Thirty. This was news when the nominations were announced. Now, since the nominations have come out, the film and Affleck have won both for picture and directing. They've been raking up awards from BAFTA, the British Academy of Film and Television Arts. They won the Broadcast Film Critics, the Golden Globes, and so forth. Now, question I have, and this gets to be political, will Argo win votes for Best Picture out of sympathy for Affleck simply because he did not get a director nomination?
But
will it get votes because voters generally feel that it deserves the Best Picture?
All right, well, let me ask you this question, and this goes to the mechanics of how the voting is done. So, in other words, he didn't get Best Director nomination, got a Best Picture. Do the people casting those votes know that when they're casting the votes?
Oh, so, well, the nominations have been out there, sure.
Yeah. They vote based
on
nominations.
Okay, so it's not, in other words, they don't vote right away.
No.
The nominations are out there and they have a chance to be lobbied heavily. I would assume.
That's right.
All right. Well, I'll tell you what. I'd love to break down some of your picks, and I think we'll do that after the break. And we'll get to your phone calls at 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. Zach, let's take that break. And then back, Rob and Audrey will handicap things. We'll get to the phones. It's Vox Pop on WAMC.
Support comes from HMT at the Spa Little Theater, presenting the 39 Steps weekends through February 24th in the Saratoga Spa State Park. HomemadeTheater.org. Dam Cafe and Deli, Saugerties, New York, serving breakfast and lunch with chef-created soups, salads, vegetarian options, and homemade desserts. Catering services available. TheDamCafeAndDeli.com. Lori Stillwell, CPA PC, providing tax and accounting services for businesses and their owners in Saratoga Springs and beyond. StillwellCPA.com. And Don Muller Gallery, Northampton, Massachusetts, specializing in jewelry, custom designs, handcrafted glass, and gifts by American artists since 1978. Facebook and DonMullerGallery.com.
Vox Pop on WAMC. We get talking about film here in the break, and I forgot that we're doing a show, so I guess we'll let you in on it. It's 1-800-348-2551. Rob Edelman, Audrey Kupferberg are here. And before we get to your breaking down of your thoughts on who will win some of the big awards, you have a couple of events coming up in the next today and Saturday.
Okay. This evening, Thursday, February 21st, 6:30 p.m., Audrey and I will be at the Malta branch of the Round Lake Library on Bayberry Drive. We'll both be discussing the Oscars. And also Saturday, this Saturday, February 23rd at 2 p.m., both of us will be talking about the Oscars at the Schenectady County Public Library, the main branch.
Wow.
So if you're in the area, you want to stop by, say hi, talk about Oscars, meet us.
Nice.
That's come nice. On by.
What do you two do for the Oscar night? Do you make popcorn and have a couple of cocktails? And
It's basically talking about Oscar history, trivia. We'll have trivia questions.
No, I don't mean at these events. When you are actually watching the Oscars at home or whatever.
We just sit and we watch and we try to be entertained.
Do you take notes?
If I'm going to be doing it for a piece for WAMC or if there's something I want to mention to my students, I might make a note.
Yeah.
It's hardly worth making notes these days because after it's all over, it's all chronicled on the internet and you can rethink your thoughts, you know, as you read it.
All right, so let's get to the phones in just a moment. Hang in there, everybody. 800-348-2551. Let's do the top five awards and see what you think. Audrey, Best Picture.
Oh, Argo.
You think?
I think. Even if this Ben Affleck mess hadn't occurred, Argo is the picture.
Okay, now I haven't seen it, but it captures the 70s vibe pretty well, eh?
Not only that, yes, a definite yes to that, but not only that, but the acting is consistently exceptional, the production values are great, the editing, the direction are well-paced and sensitive, and bottom line is entertainment value, incredible entertainment.
Were you surprised that Affleck is now, I mean, he was sort of an underachiever, or seen as an underachiever?
No, he's the next Clint Eastwood.
Really?
Yes.
He's risen. He's in that realm
he's
now.
He's made two previous films where he really showed a lot of talent, and he's coming into his own with Argo. I agree with Audrey here. I think Argo was the best picture, as I said before, that I saw last year, and I hope it wins for best picture. Also, its producers, one of its co-producers is George Clooney. Hmm. I'm the biggest George Clooney fan. George Clooney is a mensch.
Okay.
So give me, I'll be happy to see George Clooney pick up.
All right, fair enough. All right, so Argo, you both agree. Oddly, you both agree. All right, actor in a leading role. Who do we got?
That would be Bradley Cooper for Silver Linings Playbook, Daniel Day-Lewis for Lincoln, Hugh Jackman for Les Mis, Joaquin Phoenix for The Master, and Denzel Washington for Flight. I would say that Daniel Day-Lewis probably is going to win. He's been winning everything.
Okay.
This will be his third Best Actor prize. I would bet that he is going to win.
All right. Audrey?
I think it's kind of a tie in my mind between Bradley Cooper and Daniel Day-Lewis. Daniel Day-Lewis has the best publicists, or he himself has put out the word that he's the actor's actor.
Yeah.
You know, that he thinks acting in a way that everyone should come and sit at his feet and think acting.
You don't like this. You really have an attitude about this Lincoln picture.
I do, yeah. And I think if enough people believe him, he'll get the award. But I think if there's a sense of freshness in the air, it'll be Bradley Cooper.
Okay. All right. So that's your pick?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Let's just do actress in a leading role and then get to the phones. We've been keeping people waiting. What do you think, Audrey?
Okay. We have Jessica Chastain in Zero Dark Thirty, mm-hmm. Jennifer Lawrence in Silver Linings Playbook, Emmanuel Riva in Amour, Kevenjani Wallace in Beasts of the Southern Wild, and Naomi Watts in The Impossible.
Yes.
I think it's going to be Jennifer Lawrence.
Okay.
Yeah, I would agree here. Emmanuel Riva wins her award is just being nominated, 85 years old, the oldest ever Best Actress nominee. Kevenjani, if I'm pronouncing her name correctly, Wallace is the youngest ever Best
How
Actress.
How old is she?
She was 6 when she made the film, and she's only around 9.
Unbelievable.
Her getting the nomination is the award in itself.
Yeah.
Naomi Watts, nobody has seen The Impossible. It's impossible to see this film. Jessica Chastain, so I think it's between Chastain and Jennifer Lawrence. I would pick Jennifer Lawrence.
Okay.
I really believe that if she has the right people managing her career, she's going to be major. She's only 22 years old. Very, very young. This is her second nomination.
All right. Well, let's get to the phones. Steve in Westfield. Steve, you're on with Rob Edelman and Audrey Kupferberg.
I'd like to ask the two critics their opinion of the movie Amour, and also I'd like to know if it's in French in English subtitles or if it's dubbed or something else. That's it.
Okay, I'd like to talk about Amour. To me, this is a very, very special film. It is in French with English subtitles and very easy to understand, because it's the movements, the gestures, the facial expressions tell the story of two very elderly a husband and wife who are together in their last days, and the husband cares for the bedridden wife, and that's basically what it's about. It's moving, it's humane, it's so believable that I said to Rob, it's the scariest movie of the year, because you can't get it out of your head. It's a haunting film, directed by Michael Haneke. It stays with you. What bothers me about Amour, though, is that Jean-Louis Trintignant did not get a nomination. He plays the husband. He does all the work. Emmanuel Riva is the bedridden wife. I mean, yes, we see her going through the paces, and she is very good.
Yeah.
But the husband role, Jean-Louis Trintignant, who Haneke actually wrote the role for, he didn't get a nomination.
Interesting.
Well, it was wonderful.
In the acting,
thanks, Steve, for the call. Appreciate it.
In the acting category, John Hawkes for The Sessions, I was surprised that he didn't get a nomination. Also, I liked Anthony Hopkins playing Alfred Hitchcock, Jack Black in a film titled Bernie. If it's available on DVD, check this out. You get to see Jack Black basically giving an acting lesson.
Which I found so shocking.
Antonin Tignon. Again, the 5 nominees, you can't really complain about any one of them. There were a lot of good acting, lead acting last year.
Now, Amour, I mean, that will clearly, well, you would assume would win the Best Foreign Language Picture, right?
Well, you never know. Many years I think, this film is high profile, definitely going to win the Best Foreign Film, and then the film that wins is a film that I hadn't seen yet. But one point I want to make about Amour, I saw it in September at the Toronto Film Festival. By that time, it had already won the top prize at the Cannes Film Festival last spring. So I went in expecting something, and I was really blown away by the film. But again, it is a hard view. It's not a Saturday night popcorn movie.
So it's too depressing to win the actual Best Picture Award.
Oh, it definitely will not win the Best Picture.
Okay, let's go to Elaine in Lenox. Elaine.
Yes, I agree with Audrey about Lincoln. I was also very bored, and it was a beautiful, wonderful piece of our history. I was disappointed I was bored. But or Argo, pretty much the same thing. But the movie that really stayed with me and is still with me is The Life of Pi.
Oh.
No one has mentioned that today, and I'm
surprised.
It's
one of the nominees.
One
of the best
pictures.
And also it has Ang Lee for Best Director. Life of Pi didn't strike me as being memorable. And again, this is just my opinion.
Right.
It's just my view. Beautifully filmed. I think if it's going to win an award, it would win for cinematography. And I would not have any problem with that. Beautifully filmed.
And a very poignant story. A very interesting story between an animal and a man.
I'm sure. Curious if you've read the novel.
I did.
Okay, maybe that filled out the story for you.
Oh.
Because I felt that the film, which was beautiful to look at,
mm-hmm.
and should win for special effects, I felt that the screenplay was a little flat, was a little bit one note. And I think the novel has more magic to it.
It does. The novel was amazing.
Interesting. Hey, well, Elaine, thanks a lot for the call and enjoy the ceremonies. And Nancy and Socrates. Nancy, you're on. Hello, Nancy. Oh, Nancy's got to turn her radio down. Nancy fell asleep waiting, I think. Going once, Nancy. Oh, boy. All right. Sorry, Nancy. Try again. I apologize. Carl in Columbia County. Carl. Let's press the button, Ray. You dope. Nancy, Carl, Carl, how are you?
Hi, I'm not Nancy yet.
Oh, hello, Carl.
Hi there. Two questions. I love listening to the artistic sensibilities of your two guests. I have these two questions, however. Not very sensible. Not very sensitive. One, who judges the judges? Who are the judges who decide best actor, best director, best whatever? What are their capabilities? Part of that question is, what influences them? How hard do, we no longer talk about studios, how hard does the money in, broadly speaking, Hollywood?
Yeah, fair question.
Influence?
All right. That's a good question.
That's the prime question.
All right, well, let's start with
question,
oh boy. Okay.
Second quickie, technology. Obviously Spielberg, obviously Jurassic Park, and so forth and so on. How would today's technology, computer-based otherwise, improve upon Humphrey Bogart and Ingrid Bergman in Casablanca? I will shut up.
Okay, well, that's all right, good. Let's start with the first one.
Okay. All right, how are the Oscar nominees selected? By the Academy of Motion Pictures Arts and Sciences, which is a professional honorary organization. As of last year, I have this written down, there were 5,783 members divided into different branches, each representing a different discipline of film production. The actors, of course, constitute the largest voting bloc. This gets complicated, but what it comes down to is the nominations are selected by the actors vote for the actors, the cinematographers vote for the cinematographer, everybody votes for the picture. Mm-hmm. And then once the nominees are announced, all the members vote for all the categories. So that basically, I think, should answer how are these people picked. From a point of view of politics, there might be some pressure on individuals. Like decades ago, if you were working at Warner Brothers or MGM, there would be pressure on you to vote for the Warner Brothers or the MGM pictures.
Yeah.
You know, if you were a 7-year contractee with these specific studios. If your friend is up for a nomination, you might want to vote for your friend, obviously. Then some people feel that, I'm going to vote for who I honestly think is best. Then there are those who say, well, gee, this really is a competition. It's a meat market. It's, you know, there's something, you know, untoward about it. This is why George C. Scott 40 years ago refused to accept his Oscar. You know, he said, I don't like this competition. How could you have five actors playing five different roles competing and one of them wins and the others are losers? So this can go on and on,
yeah.
This discussion.
Okay.
I think it's important not to take the Oscars as very, very serious. The Oscars are personalized. You know, I mean, people are voting. Some people like the politics of one film better than another film. Some people dislike the politics in a film.
Yeah.
I dislike the politics in some films. And so they'll vote one way as opposed to another way. The only serious aspect of the decisions made by the voters is the box office effect. The winners are going to make more money at the box office than the losers. So it's a money thing.
All right. Then very quickly, Carl's second question pertained to modern technology as applied to classic films of the old days, which I think is a bad idea.
Casablanca is not going to be affected by technology. Casablanca was not a creation of technology. It was a creation of scenario writers and movie stars and Hollywood direction, and it will stay that always.
Okay.
You know, another point also about taking the Oscars, quote-unquote, seriously. You could take Edward G. Robinson. To me, he is one of the all-time great screen actors. I love him. Never even got an Oscar, didn't even win one Oscar nomination.
Yeah.
Okay. Yet you take Louise Reiner, who actually is still alive. She's past 100. She won not one but two Academy Awards for Best Actress in the 1930s. You look at Hilary Swank. Is she one of the all-time greats? I would say no. Nothing personal, Hilary. Yet she has not one but two Best Actress Oscar victories. So you can't take this seriously.
Okay, but I mean, there are enough voters that it should be. You know, the politics and the personals should even out, and there should be a more or less a consensus.
It's prestige, and it's important to understand that the film that wins Best Picture will have a spike at the box office. They'll if the film is already out of circulation, they'll re-release it.
Yeah.
You know, that's part of the business of the industry.
You know, looking at the list here, nice to see Alan Arkin up for supporting Oscar.
Yeah, yes. All five of the nominees are previous winners. And are the best actor or best supporting actor.
Yeah.
Now, when I saw Robert De Niro in Silver Linings Playbook, it was a great performance. He hasn't given a good performance in, as far as I'm concerned, decades. As far as I'm concerned,
what was the last one you would say was good?
God knows. Goodfellas, maybe. We're talking about 20 years ago, whatever. I think he's been living on his reputation, you know, films like Taxi Driver, Raging Bull, second Godfather film, and here he is giving.
He's not really all that challenged in the Fockers film.
Yeah,
well, I'm totally glad you said that properly.
Totally,
by the way,
I tried hard. Yeah.
I appreciate it.
And you know, when I saw Silver Linings, I thought, oh, he's going to win, and I still think he just may. Although Tommy Lee Jones, I also liked him in Lincoln, so I think it's between De Niro and Tommy Lee Jones.
All right, let's go back to the phones at 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. It could be Tim, it could be Jim in Gilderland, one or the other. Who is this?
It's Tim.
Hi, Tim. How are you?
I'm pretty good. A couple quick questions. I think De Niro has been phoning it in for about 20 years now.
Couldn't agree more.
Absolutely. But my other question is this, is that can you explain, this is not an Academy Award question, this is a, can you explain to me, maybe you can, why do actors like Tom Hanks and Robert Redford never play unsympathetic character?
Unsympathetic?
Good agent, yes.
Good agent, good manager.
Mm. Also, it's their choices. People who are of that, who are at that level get to pick and choose.
Also, I would hearken back to Cary Grant. Cary Grant always wanted to play a villain, and he was told by studio bosses, by agents, by anyone who had an influence over him that it would hurt his career, it would hurt his image. And I have a feeling that Tom Hanks and Robert Redford are very careful of their images so that they're picking and choosing very
now,
positive characters.
Now, you could take an actor like Denzel Washington, who, as far as I'm concerned, I'll watch Denzel Washington read the phone book.
Okay.
I'll watch Denzel Washington read the phone book. His role in Training Day was so great.
Yeah, but again, he plays heroic characters, good guys, and in Training Day, he's a crooked cop. In American Gangster, he's a Don Corleone-like mob leader. In Flight, he plays a character who is at once heroic but deeply flawed. So, you know, here's an actor who says, I'll run the gamut. I'll play the good guy and the bad guy.
Yeah.
and that's his choice.
Well, that has not hurt his career.
Oh, not at all. But
not at all. But
other actors might say, well, there's a certain image that I want to put out there, and so I'm going to be very careful about the roles that I choose. Yeah.
And that's really a sad commentary, quite frankly, because Pacino will play anything.
Oh, yes.
I think it's the difference between an actor and the star system.
Star system.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, clearly, Cary Grant, in fact, Rob and I were going back and forth about North by Northwest the other day. You know, that he was a very good actor. But, I mean, he made his choice. Does that mean just because he says, well, I'm going to make the career path of being the good guy or the bad guy, does that make them less of an actor, Audrey, in your book?
Potentially, no, but he never got the range that he deserved to have.
Okay. Yeah. Hey, Tim, or it's Tim, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, hey, thanks a lot for the call. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Yep. Rob Edelman and Audrey Kupferberg, our guests today. We're talking about the Oscars. Love to hear from you. 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. More coming up.
Support comes from the Honest Wait Food Co-op in Albany, offering local and organic produce, natural groceries, artisan cheeses, and more. Honestwait.coop. Hildene, the Lincoln Family Home, Manchester, Vermont. Historic home, Pullman car, museum store, and walking trails open daily year-round, 9:30 to 4:30. Hildene.org. Vision Excel Eye Care, Lake Katrine, New York, providing eye exams, eye care, dry eye therapy, glaucoma management, and specialty contact lens fitting. Where eyewear is an art, Facebook or visionexceleyecare.com. And New York State Tobacco-Free Community Partners, working to reduce youth and adult smoking rates across the state and help save lives. New York State Tobacco-Free Community Partners at smokefreecapital.org.
Vox Pop, WAMC, Oscar Vox Pop, Rob Edelman, Audrey Kupferberg here at 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Patrick Donjes is here with nothing from social media, but apparently something burning that he has to say.
Well, I just wanted to check in and let people know that they can post at the bottom of today's show page at WAMC.org/VoxPop our Vox Pop wall post today at Facebook.com/WAMC Radio or tweet us at WAMC Vox Pop.
Is this a subtle way of saying I haven't done that enough?
No, it's
I
not
did
at all.
Do it at the beginning of the show.
I heard it. I heard it a couple times. Right. I just had a just a thought because I, as I think I may have mentioned to either or both of you guys, Rob and Audrey, I have a friend who was a set dresser on Beasts of the Southern Wild, and I remember when he was when they brought the film to festivals. I had asked him, "What do you think the chances are that this thing could be nominated?" And his response was, I don't think it's so good because it wasn't union working on the film.
Oh,
so
there's some politics.
So then does that surprise you that it's nominated, or is that a sentiment that's...
Well,
you
know. one thing that the Oscar nominations do tell us is the changes in the industry. And I remember 10, 15 years ago, the rise of the independent production where we had... Boys Don't Cry, Christine Vachon was the winner, winning producer. You know, a small film about a transsexual, a transvestite, really, you know, was not expected. But now I think we have more changes showing up in the industry, and that's where Beasts of the Wild, Southern Wild, comes from. We have the non-union, the small film, the film that can even be created on an iPod, you know?
Yeah, sure.
This is something that we're going to have to deal with from now on, and I think this is opening the door, Beasts of the Southern Wild. I personally don't see it as one of the best films of the year. I don't even see it as an important film. I didn't care for the film. I thought it was I thought it lacked direction. I thought that it was amateurish, not in the best sense of the word. Not that your friend didn't do a good job.
I'm sure he won't take it personally.
That's fine.
Okay, thanks, guys.
Hey, thanks a lot, Patrick. The number to call is 1-800-348-2551. Oops, I hit the wrong button here. Let's go. Who is this?
Hello.
Hello, who is this?
This is Tim from Woodstock.
Oh, hello, Tim in Woodstock. Yeah, I did press the right button. You're on with Rob and Audrey.
Good. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Great. Well, that was really interesting that Patrick brought up Beasts of the Southern Wild. Thanks for the great dialogue, guys. That's exactly what I want to talk about. Audrey, it's obvious that you didn't like it, thought it was amateurish, et cetera. It was shot in 16-millimeter film by a son of two anthropologists, and it had a lot of local documentary flavor to it, and you may think that the story wandered. My own personal experience of the film was that it was the most powerful and most memorable film of the year, maybe outside of a couple. I can't think of anything about Argo that I remember except for Alan Arkin and maybe the embassy scene. I mean, nothing in that film stuck to me. It was entertaining, but it went one in one eye and out the other.
Rob has been strangely silent about this. Rob, what do you think?
I'm curious to know what Rob has to say about this film, and I just want to say that I think it's one of the most original American films to come along in a long time, and is very reminiscent of The Bicycle Thief and other Italian neorealist films.
Okay.
Okay, here's... Oftentimes I disagree with Audrey. This is one time where I do agree with her. And again, it's just a matter of opinion, how you respond to the film. Doesn't really matter who made it, where it comes from, how you sit, you watch a film for a couple of hours, how do you respond? I have basically the same reaction that Audrey did. I thought it was very nicely photographed, but I just did not get involved with this with this film. Again, just this is my opinion. I was a bit surprised when the young actress won got the actress in the leading role nomination. On one level, it's kind of cute and sweet because she's so young, but maybe, to my mind, maybe there wasn't all that much competition for the best actress awards. There was quite a bit for the best actor. Maybe last year wasn't the best year for female acting.
Mm-hmm. I can hear you, Rob. I think it is a pretty personal call, but I think a lot of people in the Academy responded to the relationship between the daughter and the father, which I thought was exemplary. It was a really great piece of spontaneous writing, or not even writing, but improvising. Mm-hmm. None of these actors were professionals.
I'm curious about your remark about Bicycle Thieves. How do you relate this to Italian neorealism, when Italian neorealism is so structured and so organized and almost confining in its guidelines?
Well, that was great. Italian neorealism had a sort of claustrophobia and an intimacy to it, and I thought this film had the same kind of intimacy. The relationship between the daughter and the father was very reminiscent to me of the relationship between Giulietta de Messina and Anthony Quinn in La Strada. And I thought some of the acting and some of the scenes were incredibly powerful in that way.
Well, Tim, thank you very much for that. Okay. Audrey, you want to get the last word on that one?
No.
All right. Now, we talked about this in break, and now is our chance to talk about Zero Dark Thirty. Toby in Connecticut, you're on.
Hi. I was going to throw my hat in the ring for Zero Dark Thirty, and I think you brought up politics, too. I think that may have played into Catherine Bigelow not getting nominated, and not even politics in the way of political, but kind of a slap where she won for her first film and we're going to kind of leave her be on this one. But I think it was the best movie I've seen so far from last year. To go off in a different tangent, Beasts of the Southern Wild, I didn't think it was amateurish, but I didn't like it as much. And you mentioned the actress getting nominated. I kind of think it's a crime that Marion Cotillard didn't get nominated for Rust and Bone.
Good film.
She should be in there.
Yep.
Go ahead.
There's a certain similarity between Argo and Zero Dark Thirty, both based on fact stories. We know how they end, and they're both thrillers. But the difference is that the events that we see in Argo took place, 30-plus years ago? Zero Dark Thirty, the events are just 2-3 years ago during Obama's presidency. And I think this is what makes Zero Dark Thirty controversial, because it's still, time-wise, it's still a little too close to us. What happened in Argo happened in 1979, 1980. So there's a bit of distance historically.
Yeah.
I think that is really the one big difference, and this is why Zero Dark Thirty, I think, has been controversial in certain circles because of its content.
All right.
Can I ask you a question about the time difference, too? In the style of filmmaking, Zero Dark Thirty seemed more immediate to me. Is that part of the style, or is that just because it's closer time period?
Well, that's a question I think maybe you should answer best, but my response might be because we're still having this quote-unquote war on terrorism. So the immediacy, maybe it's more immediate to you because we're still involved in these events. What happened in Argo is already ancient history, given the fact that we live in a time in which what happened last Tuesday is considered ancient history.
Oh, yes,
so,
true enough. Totally,
you know, that might be it.
Well, I mean, you know, doesn't it give Affleck more license to embellish and to stretch and to make things perhaps not exactly as they were in the Argo story? I mean, Zero Dark Thirty, yes, a lot of it is still very murky and classified, but it's in yesterday's headlines.
Well, I'm going to chime in on this. Argo covers a few days in the lives of the people involved in the event. Zero Dark Thirty takes on 11 years worth of material. And I thought that was the flaw in Zero Dark Thirty. 12 years of material were presented to us. And some of it was presented in a rather half-hearted manner. I thought Bigelow took on more than she could chew with that film.
Also, any film that's based on real events, historical events, or that a biopic, from a point of view of just getting entertainment value or telling a story that the audience could follow, there are invariably going to be changes. This is going to be added. 10 characters might be compressed into one or two characters.
Yeah.
Again, the point is just to keep the audience interested, to keep the audience, make the audience, allow the audience to be able to follow the story. So whenever you see a film that's based on a historical event or that tells the so-called real life of a real person, you really have to understand that you're watching a movie that primarily is made to entertain. You're not reading an 800-page historical tome or biography. That, I think, is so important.
Was it a good picture?
I liked it more than Audrey did, I think.
I thought it was a very well-made film, but I never was engaged with it.
Yeah.
Part of it, I have to talk about the torture sequence in this film because
there's waterboarding
really
depicted.
Yes, waterboarding is depicted, and then the dog collar scene is in it. And I felt with the waterboarding, I felt like it was more like a refreshing drink of water on his face than a torture. She didn't have her heart in showing that to us. So a half a pitcher of water is poured on the prisoner's face with a rag over his face. And he squirms and cries out. And after the half pitcher is over, we see no more water going onto his face. Now, as I understand waterboarding, every orifice of one's body is filled with water and gushing out. And it's a horrific experience which can cause death. This didn't even cause a problem.
And you know, the reason for that just may be you're trying to sell a film, you're trying to make a film that you want to be mainstream, and if you're going to portray torture, you might say, I'm going to put certain limitations on this. I'll show something to get the essence of what it may be, but I'm not going to show the entire thing, because we want people to sit through this film.
That's a great point.
That could be.
It'll also be interesting to see, after we get to the point 20 years from now, just how much of this is actually close to accurate. I mean, in other words, things are still falling out. At least with Argo, an amount of time has gone by where you sort of know the chronology of events. Still not sure we know all the chronology of events here. Let's go to Bob in Stillwater. Bob.
Yes. My question kind of relates to what you were just talking about. I just felt that I've heard some of the torturing really was exaggerated, because apparently the guy wasn't tortured who helped identify and obtain and, you know, assassinate Osama bin Laden.
Well, I can't answer that. Anybody?
Well, all I would say is that you see it in a movie, you got to remember it's a movie. If you want to know the actual history, you'll get a better chance of learning the quote-unquote facts. If you read a book, you read a newspaper, a good newspaper magazine account, someone who has researched the subject and who is trying to get to the truth, as opposed to somebody who's trying to make a film that ultimately needs to be sold as entertainment.
But there are several parts to this 11, 12-year period in Zero Dark Thirty. First, you begin with the World Trade Center attack. Mm-hmm. Then you get to a point in American treatment of prisoners, where the prisoners are being tortured in a way that is un-American. Mm-hmm. And that becomes a scandal. That's where we see the torture sequence. Then many years later, after lots of other events, we have the bin Laden takedown. Too much is going on in this film to even track the events and the prisoners being shown.
Rob, you almost said something.
Nothing. Right.
Thanks, Bob.
Well, I just appreciate that. I would recommend people listen to documentaries like the World Channel and try to get the real information.
Okay.
You know, particularly not listen to a movie that's basically, as you point out, entertainment.
Well, that's the point.
Yeah.
Could be propaganda.
All right. Well, we are talking about the movies today, but that's a good point. Thanks, Bob. Let's go to Eden and Troy. You're on.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm calling to talk about the movie The Master.
Oh.
I saw that and I thought it was absolutely incredible.
I totally agree.
That Philip Seymour Hoffman, Joaquin Phoenix, and the movie itself should have all been nominated. And I felt like it was a really profound, beautiful movie, and beautifully shot.
Well.
And I'm wondering if it wasn't nominated just because it was too dark of a film. That was sort of my instinct about it.
Well.
Because it was just too dark and weird for people.
Well, The Master was one of my top films of last year. It did get some nominations. It got nominations for Joaquin Phoenix for Best Actor. And again, you know, he really is a fine actor. Whatever you may think about his off-camera activities, he really is a fine actor. Also, Philip Seymour Hoffman did get nominated for Best Supporting Actor, and Amy Adams got a nomination for Best Supporting Actress. Not for Best Film. I really thought it was an excellent film. It could have been nominated. Now you can have up to 10 nominations for Best Film. There only were 9. If the 10th one was The Master, I would have no problem with that. Paul Thomas Anderson, I think, is a very talented filmmaker. I saw the film in Toronto and back in September. Loved it. Nothing else really more to add. I think it has a lot to say about war veterans, portrayals of war veterans. If we had an hour, I could talk about this film for the next hour.
All right, well, next time. Eden, thanks a lot for the call. We appreciate it very much. Let's get to Sola in Albridge. You're on.
Hello.
Hello.
Hey, well, I guess Eden sort of stole my fire because I was calling to pitch Joaquin Phoenix's performance for Best Actor. So it looks like I have some agreement.
Any chance that happens?
I don't think so. I think, and part of this is political. He just may be a little too controversial. He was supposed to have given up acting a few years ago. Here he is. And again, really, it seems that Daniel Day-Lewis is going to win. I think it will be a big shock if he does not win. Whether he deserves it or not is another story. But, you know, if you haven't seen The Master, it's coming out on DVD momentarily. Check it out. It really is good.
I like watching you two in action because I can tell based on who's silent what they're... So you've been silent, Audrey, about The Master.
I'm thinking about Eden's remark about the darkness of The Master and how that may have preempted it from being on the list of Best Picture. And I'm thinking to myself, my God, these are all dark pictures on the best list.
Yeah.
Django Unchained is a horrifying look at humanity. Les Miserables, if you thought Django Unchained was as bad as it can get, Les Miserables took you one step down from that.
Yeah.
I'm having
nightmares from old, you know, and Zero Dark Thirty couldn't be darker.
So that leaves Argo and Lincoln.
Lincoln was a dark film, interrupted only a couple times by the Sally Field scenes. And Silver Linings Playbook is about mental illness. So what the heck are we talking about?
So this is why Argo wins. By process of elimination, we come to your choices. Hey, we're out of time. Rob Edelman and Audrey Kupferberg will be at the Malta branch of the Round Lake Library tonight, 6:30, and on Saturday at 2 at the main branch of the Schenectady County Public Library. If you didn't get in today, you want to talk Oscars, that's the time to do it. Great job. Enjoy the shows, and we'll see you soon, I guess, right?
Great. Hopefully, yes. Always a pleasure.
Support for WAMC comes from the Garrison in the The Garrison in the Hudson Highlands, featuring restaurants, golf, getaway packages, special event planning, and nearby cultural attractions. TheGarrison.com. Bel Air Mountain Ski Center, now managed by the New York State Olympic Regional Development Authority, New York's Winter Snow Park, belair.com. The Nature Conservancy's Adirondack Chapter, working to protect ecologically important lands and waters of the Adirondacks for nature and people, nature.org/Adirondacks. And the Tang Teaching Museum and Art Gallery at Skidmore College, providing exhibits, public events, and educational programs for audiences of all ages for the Capital District and beyond, 518-580-8080. That's it for today's program. Thanks to Rob Edelman and Audrey Kupferberg. Enjoy the Oscars, everybody, and we'll find out. You can, of course, chime in on the website after the Oscars, wamc.org/voxpop. Put your comments there. Thanks to Zach Malloy, who handled the controls. Our phones were answered by Matt Don Diego. That's the guy's name. And our producer, Patrick Donges. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, Moyers and Company will be on. And then on Monday, Medical Monday with Dr. Ron Stram. Stay tuned now for a news update.